And welcome to the Space Show. And we're going to have a bit of news and a very special program tonight. But first up, let's kick out with our usual Space Show theme, which is Vangelis, Motion of Stars. Welcome to the Space Show, presented by members of the Space Association of Australia. Hello, I'm Andrew Rennie. And on this evening's show, it is 40 years since man walked on the moon. Yes. In fact, just a little over 40 years, because at this time they were on the way back, I think, and about to splash down. But we asked the question this week, what if Kennedy had not made that fateful request to Congress in 1961? Would we have ever gone to the moon? How might history have been different? And to help put you in the mood, let's just have a listen to this.
Now it is time to take longer strides. Time for a great new American enterprise. Time for this nation to take a clearly leading role in space achievement, which in many ways may hold the key to our future on Earth. I believe we possess all the resources and talents necessary. I believe that this nation should commit itself to achieving the goal, before this decade is out, of landing a man on the moon and returning him safely to the Earth. No single space project in this period will be more impressive to mankind or more important for the long-range exploration of space, and none will be so difficult or expensive to accomplish. We propose to accelerate the development of the appropriate lunar spacecraft. We propose to develop alternate liquid and solid fuel boosters, much larger than any now being developed, until certain which is superior.
And that was President Kennedy speaking in 1961, May the 25th, just a few weeks after Alan Shepard had made a suborbital flight. And we're asking the question this evening, would this have happened had Kennedy not made that speech?
I'm going to step off the land now. It's one small step for man, one
anyway, that's coming up later in the Space Show when we have three guests to discuss that very issue. And you're listening to the Space Show. Now, 40 years ago, at this very moment, three men were speeding towards the Earth, falling towards the Earth. They would reach a speed of about 40,000 kilometers per hour, and then they'd slammed into the atmosphere above the Pacific Ocean. And fortunately, their spacecraft survived the re-entry into the Earth's atmosphere. Parachutes opened, and they splashed down into the Pacific. That happened on 1972, December the 19th. They had been the final three in the Apollo S series of missions to walk on the moon. Their names were Gene Cernan, the commander, Harrison Schmitt, the lunar module pilot, and Ronald Evans, the command module pilot. They had been in space for 301 hours and 52 minutes. When I say in space, I including, of course, the time they were walking on the moon. They walked on the moon three times, totaling 23 hours and 10 minutes. And Ronald Evans had the honour of doing a spacewalk on the way back, sort of midway, not exactly midway, but partway between the Earth and the Moon to recover some film capsules. And that spacewalk lasted 1 hour and 6 minutes. The two astronauts who landed on the moon drove 35 kilometres with their lunar roving vehicle, and they brought back to Earth 110 kilograms of lunar samples. So that's happening 40 years ago today, and we've got a little clip here of that to return to Earth.
December 19th. They rode inside a 5,000-degree fireball through the atmosphere of Earth, stowed in the spacecraft almost 250 pounds of the moon.
And so ended the Apollo series of lunar missions. There were several Apollo missions after that, Skylab. Well, they were really Apollo. And, of course, there was Apollo-Soyuz, the link-up with the Russians. But basically, Apollo came to an end. The lunar missions came to an end at that time. Now, at the beginning of the show, we played you a little clip from Kennedy making one of his speeches, the famous To the Moon speech. And tonight we're going to be discussing whether or not, how might history have been different had Kennedy not made that speech, had he made some other commitment. For example, some people said that he was going to consider doing a war on cancer to find the cure for cancer. Well, of course, there's no cure for cancer. There's cures, plural, for cancer. Another one suggested that he thought that desalination was the most important thing to be done at that time. So, but no, he chose the moon, and history was set. Now, to discuss this and other issues, we're joined by Len Halperin from the Space Association from East Brighton, and also by Kate Doolin from the Space Association and from Parkdale. And she's the author of Fallen Astronauts and numerous magazine articles, and Peter Arwood, the Membership Secretary of the Space Association of Australia. And we'd like to welcome you all to the Space Show.
Thank you, Thank Andrew.
Now, perhaps we could kick off with another little thing here. Kennedy made a number of points when he was doing his speech, and let's go through these and discuss them in turn and just see what actually happened from each of those points before we discuss what would happen had he not made them at all. So here's the first point.
First, I believe that this nation should commit itself to achieving the goal, before this decade is out, of landing a man on the moon and returning him safely to the Earth. No single space project in this period will be more impressive to mankind or more important for the long-range exploration of space, and none will be so difficult or expensive to accomplish.
Well, I promise to go to the moon. Len?
Yeah, I really believe, Andrew, that the facts are that Kennedy was just the end of a long chain of decisions that had already been made. And really the driving force in his administration for space was Johnson, who later became president. So the vice president was running really the space show inside the US government. And really this all stemmed from what was not an American space program or even a Russian space program. You could argue that it goes back to Stalin and Hitler, because I think that's where the whole rocketry program began. So in a way, it's the Russian and Nazi space programs, but I think that's overstating it a bit. So what had really happened was that when the Russians launched their satellite in 1958, that it sent the Americans into a panic, and Eisenhower initiated the American space program. To cut a long story short, I think Kennedy was at the end of that decision, and he was going on very, very strong advice from Johnson and the Space Committee in his cabinet.
Okay. Kate, your take on that part of the speech?
Well, Len was correct in stating that Johnson was the driving force behind it all. He'd been interested in the space program since Sputnik, and at one stage one of his advisors had written a memo saying, play the space game right, you'll be in the White House. Kennedy wasn't that interested in space. One of the things that turned him around was the reaction to Shepard's flight by the American people. If you recall, Gagarin's flight was done in complete secrecy, and no one knew anything about it till it was over. This Shepard's flight, literally the whole world was watching. Al Shepard could have been blown up into a million pieces over Cape Canaveral. And yet they didn't want to keep that a secret. They kept it all in the open. And that had a great impact on him, as I said, as did the public reaction.
So both of you think that Johnson didn't get the credit he deserved, that Kennedy got it instead?
I don't think it's really a credit game, Andrew. I think Johnson was happy to see space going because he was following on the lead from Eisenhower, who was a Republican. Johnson was a Democrat. But Eisenhower's administration was completely freaked out by what had happened with Sputnik. And Eisenhower initiated the very first space program of the Americans was a deep black program, a secret program called Corona, and that only became declassified many decades later. And they were so freaked out at the possibility of an object being launched from another continent being able to hit them that they wanted to do as much reconnaissance as possible. And so they launched these spy satellites in the series called Corona. And that was one of Eisenhower's top programs, and he was pouring a lot of money into that because he was desperate to not be caught with his pants down. And Johnson just picked up the mantle from that when the administration changed, and Kennedy became the front piece of that, the face of that.
Mm. And Peter?
Actually, it's interesting to look at recent history and overlay it on past, well, early history. One of the driving forces for the space program has always been the development of accurate, powerful rockets. Now, how do you, in a Western democracy, focus a huge amount of the government's resources on potentially offensive weapons, but disguise it in a way that doesn't look offensive? The space program. And you see this today in North Korea. What did they do last week? Oh, we sent a peaceful satellite into orbit. Of course, most observers really say that that's a disguise for their weaponry development. So, yeah, it's an interesting sort of coalition of forces and situations. And also going back to that period, of course, Cold War, democracy versus the communist sort of philosophy, seeking influence in countries throughout Asia and Africa of which way would we go, whose alliance would we go with, where the prestige is, etc., etc. So I think Kennedy tapped into the potential and saw that as a focus and as a very defining finish line to say, well, this is what we're going to do, this is how we're going to focus everything, and this is where we're going to go. And to be honest, it's something that we lack today. We need a focus. And unfortunately, you know, things like, unfortunately most times, the development of and advances of technology come from a need. Most of the time, a lot of the technical developments happen as a result of a war. You know, we need to develop radar because we're getting hit by the Germans. We develop a weapon or we develop flight or whatever because of an imperative need to survive or to win a war. Getting to the moon, it was an imperative need. It had a deadline. They had to do it. So they threw the resources in to do it. So the way that history is unfolded, we kind of waft around with some undefined goals and really have an undefined program.
I have here an estimated chronology of space programs that was published in 1957. And going forward from 1957, it sees scientific satellites, space probes, and a lunar near miss that's unmanned from 1959. Then in 1960, there'd come communications, navigation, meteorological, missile early warning, and reconnaissance satellites, as Len has already referred to. And then in 1961, manned capsule in orbit. Lunar impact, unmanned. Lunar orbit and return, again unmanned. Then from 1962, there'd be planetary probes and commercial communication satellites. Then a lunar soft landing by unmanned craft in 1963. Electronic countermeasure satellites in 1964. And a manned Earth satellite station would come in 1964. And possibly a lunar sample return from the moon by an unmanned craft. Then in 1965, become planetary orbiters. In 1966, soft instrument landing on planets and a manned Earth satellite space laboratory coming in 1966. And a manned lunar circumnavigation in 1967. And then operational manned military space platform in Earth orbit in 1968. And man on the moon in 1969.
Wow.
And a manned lunar base from 1970 to 75. That's how it was seen as NASA's 10-year plan. So my question is, what impact do you think Kennedy had on that sort of chronology? Would that chronology have been realistic had Kennedy not made that speech?
I think that what he brought to it was the charisma to sell it. It was always going to happen. It's just the public need to be convinced. So the two key events were the fact that the Russians were beating them, and Kennedy was this young, charismatic president that could come along and say, you know what, folks, we're going to get back in the game and we're going to beat them by going to the moon. So he brought his... It purely was the magic of him, of charisma, to sell the message, even though it wasn't his message, but he would sell whatever he was told to sell. And really it was Johnson and the Space Committee that were pushing it. And I believe the moon landing would have happened in roughly the same chronology, with or without Kennedy.
Do you think, Len, that his unfortunate assassination might have played a role in actually the national commitment to go ahead and...
Yes.
And meet that deadline? Because, you know, we've all seen these commitments to, you know, a certain task or a certain program by subsequent presidents, only to see it drift out the window because of budget constraints or a change of administration or whatever. You know, what he brought and what his assassination brought, I think, is a sort of a bipartisan national focus to say, in memory of our, you know, whatever, our president, our leader... I think that helped underline it. Don't think so, Len? Kate?
Well, public support for the space program was dropping by late 1963, and Congress was going to cut the budget even further. And then you have the events in Dallas. And then a couple of days after Dallas, Johnson named the Cape Canaveral after President Kennedy. And then this goal became, oh, let us do this in memory of our fallen leader. And, I think that his assassination had a lot to do with that deadline. From that time onwards, it was, we're doing this in honour of President Kennedy. And,
So it was Johnson that was behind the assassination, you think?
No, I don't believe that. And, the thing is, Johnson was good for space, but once he got to the White House, there was the problems he had in Vietnam, domestic problems, and space sort of really started to fall behind.
Well, that's right, because, you know, if we sit here in 2012 and look back at the 60s and think, well, everyone was right into the moon landings, everyone was pro-space, everyone was gung-ho, let's do it. But actually,
they weren't.
Back in the time, there was a lot of, you know, close votes in the Congress and a lot of public debate about why are we spending all this money with Vietnam, with pollution, with all these other things. So,
Kennedy was asking that question before Vietnam had really kicked in. Mm. He was asking that question of the NASA administrator in 1962 when he carpeted him in his office. And Kate knows that quote quite well. That Kennedy says to him, Andrew will play the clip later, he said, I'm not that interested in space. Mm. I think we need to be really clear. The what got men to the moon was politics. It was the Cold War.
Yeah.
Without the Cold War, it wouldn't have happened. Mm. So Kennedy just sort of... I agree with what you said, that the assassination probably emboldened the nation. It sort of fortified their resolve, but it was going to happen anyway.
Shall we just listen to that clip of Kennedy?
Sure.
When did this...
This was released by the Kennedy Library only a few years ago, in the mid-2000s. And
you were speaking about 1963,
he was speaking September
62,
18 months after the famous We'll Go to the Moon speech, and he'd brought the NASA administrator and deputy administrator into his office, and he was basically... just to set it up, he was asking them, you know, are we going to get anything out of spending these massive amounts of money because we're killing all our other programs to do this? So...
Well, let's take a listen to that.
Yeah, the market's still at $400 million at this point. I want to take a look at what you gave there, but I do think we ought to get it, really clear that the policy ought to be that this is the top priority program of the agency and one of the two, except for defense, the top priority of the United States government, I think. But that's the condition we ought to take. Now, this may not change anything about that schedule, but at least we ought to be clear. Otherwise, we shouldn't be spending this kind of money because I'm not that interested in space. I think it's good. I think we ought to know about it. We're ready to spend reasonable amounts of money, but we're talking about these fantastic expenditures which wreck our budget and all these other domestic programs, and the only justification for it, in my opinion, to do it is to come out.
Well, that was Kennedy speaking in the White House, I believe. And we know that Nixon came unstuck because of recorders in the White House, but Kennedy had them as well. So not particularly interested in space. I know he was wondering whether it should be cancelled. In 1962, he made that famous speech at Rice University, which he reaffirmed it. But leading up to that, he was wondering what else could be done with that money.
Well, there was another interesting aspect to it. In the last year of his life, and even just in the month prior, the days prior to the assassination, he'd been making approaches to the Russians that maybe that this could continue as a joint project, because he realised what the budgetary requirements of sending people to the moon was going to be. This was going to take billions of dollars, and other programs were hurting. And even at that stage, the real enormity of Vietnam still hadn't kicked in. It was Vietnam that was going to hurt the Johnson administration. But he had been making overtures to Khrushchev, which he had rejected. So there would have been more effort in that direction had Kennedy stayed alive.
Okay. Let's take another part of this speech by President Kennedy, made to Congress in 1961, May the 25th, just about 3 weeks after.
Just before you hit that clip, yes. Andrew, I was just thinking, I'm in sales, and one of the things that I do is to try to convince a client to buy my software. And one of the things they do is they ask me questions that their managers or their CEO is going to ask them. Why would I invest in this? I don't need this. How is this going to help my... I'm not that interested. I've got this. Why would I do it? You tell me the answers. And that may have been behind his questioning, his quizzing, his interrogation of the administrator. Tell me how I can defend this. Give me the evidence. Give me the KPIs.
Well, just a quick comeback on that. I hear what you're saying, but I think he realised that he was inheriting a program that he'd got from Eisenhower and his VP Johnson, and he was stuck with this massive drain on the budget, and it was just getting bigger and bigger. I think he had a genuine political interest in this, and he wanted to know where all the money was going, and if it was going to he was going to get any bang for his buck, if they were actually going to beat the Russians.
Well, certainly, if the program hadn't been as successful as it was, he certainly would have thrown up a whole different twist in history, wouldn't it?
Well, Kennedy's speech in Congress was not entirely devoted to the Apollo program, and that's the part you always hear, but there are lots of other parts, and here's another part now.
Secondly, an additional $23 million, together with $7 million already available, will accelerate development of the Rover nuclear rocket. This gives promise of someday providing a means for even more exciting and ambitious exploration of space, perhaps beyond the moon, perhaps to the very end of the solar system itself.
Now, many people don't realise that there was, in fact, a nuclear rocket program called NERVA, and they had a Kiwi reactor. So they did have a rocket engine. Where did it go?
The program was called NOVA, and it was considered the follow-on in the Saturn family. And I'll just say that the Saturn family actually derives from the German V2. All the rockets the Americans ever launched are basically V2 derivatives. And the NOVA program was going to use the same engines, except more of them, in more clusters and larger stages. And the third stage was going to comprise nuclear engines called NERVAs, but the first two stages were going to use the same engines as the Saturn rockets, and this was going to be called NOVA. The program was cancelled in, I think, about 63 or 64 when they realised that the Saturn V would achieve the mass lifts that they needed to do to get humans to the moon. So the NOVA program was just becoming too expensive. There was one rocket built. I don't think anything was ever launched or fired, but no. So they went with the Saturn V.
But they had they did continue development of the engine.
Until 63.
Until?
About 63, 64, the NOVA.
Yes. Yeah. Okay, so the rocket was called NOVA.
Mm-hmm.
But the engine development was called NERVA.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
Now, here's another of Kennedy's requests to Congress.
Third, an additional $50 million will make the most of our present leadership by accelerating the use of space satellites for worldwide communications.
Well, where would we be? Where would we be today without communication satellites?
Well, communication satellites work because they have a viable business model. There are customers for them. So again, that would be totally independent of anything Kennedy said or did. The business world would have said, here's a capability, we need it, we can use it, we'll pay for it, and if there's a dollar to be made, it'll work. And that's why to this day we have ComSats and WeatherSats and resource satellites, because there are viable business models for them. And to get to low Earth orbit is relatively affordable by large corporations and multinationals.
Yes, because that was 1961 he was saying this, and by 1962 we had Telstra, which was a privately built satellite. Well, I'd say privately, it's built by Bell, wasn't it? One of those companies. And then, of course, we went to geostationary. But again, it was necessary for the government to put a bit of money in to prove the technology, and then the commercial people came in, the customers came, didn't they?
Well, that's because in the 60s, the government owned the launch vehicles. There was no private launch capability to get these viable business moneymakers into orbit. They had to hitch a ride on a government launcher. And so the government had to seed that program to convince business to come along.
And virtually all the launches that evolved and continue to evolve from military rockets, right?
Mm-hmm.
In most cases.
Yes. But even today, for communication satellites, government money is needed to prove the new technologies, laser communications between satellites, for example. The Europeans are investing a lot of money, the European Space Agency, which government organisation, investing money into the new technologies of communication satellites, which is then handed over to private enterprise.
That's correct with the satellite, but to get to geostationary orbit, it's still only governments essentially to this stage that have the launch capability to put something satisfactorily and safely into geo orbits rather than low Earth orbit. I mean, we've got private people like Falcon, SpaceX doing things in low Earth orbit. They've yet to demonstrate repeated success in getting things into geosynchronous orbit, which is 10 times further away.
Yes, we should point out that when we mean low Earth orbit, we usually mean something below about 2,000 kilometres.
Or a few hundred kilometres.
Typically about 700 kilometres. And that when we're talking about geostationary orbit, we're talking something about 38,000 kilometres away from the Earth. That's around about 3 Earth diameters away. All right, now here's another of his promises. We've partly touched on this one.
Fourth, an additional $75 million, of which $53 million is for the Weather Bureau, will help give us at the earliest possible time a satellite system for worldwide weather observation.
And that came to pass, didn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
And where would we be today without those satellite pictures on our television?
In a lot of trouble when you think in the early 60s, I believe, there was a large hurricane in the southern US and there was quite a large death toll. But by 1966, there was another hurricane, and because they had these weather satellites, they were able to tell people, look, you've got a hurricane about to hit your shores, get out of there, and the death toll was very small. And all along now, ever since then, you've had, with being able to predict natural disasters, it's led to people being able to be evacuated. It's basically it said, here's trouble, get out of there. And the amount of lives that those satellites have saved, you wouldn't be able to count.
Well, we are in a discussion on Kennedy's speech to the moon and how it affected the course of space history. And we'll be back with this discussion in a moment after this station message.
If you like your music local and live, tune in to Southern FM's Live Sunday Sessions, where we feature local artists and bands playing live to air in the studio each week. And listen out for giveaways and details of gigs as we discuss their musical career between songs. Support your local independent artists and keep music live. Check out our website at southernfm.com.au to see who's coming up and to hear podcasts of previous shows. Live Sunday Sessions, 4 p.m. every Sunday here on 88.3 Southern FM.
Where today's community news makes conversation, the great Southern Sounds of Melbourne, 88.3 Southern FM.
And you're listening to The Space Show, where our special guests today are Len Halprin, Kate Doolin and Peter Arwood, all from the Space Association of Australia. Now, I'd like to read a little bit from a book here, which is called Earthbound Astronauts, and it's about the builders of the Apollo Saturn, and it's written by Bernie Lay. And unlike many books which discuss all the astronauts and the exciting things they did, this discusses the behind-the-scenes development. And this particular paragraph says, as the decade of the 50s ended, no parts of the eventual stack of the Apollo Saturn were yet visible, not even the engines, nor was there a firm, quote, Apollo program. But the tools to build the stack for a manned moonshot and men with the know-how to use them were on hand. What was lacking was a catalyst. Moscow supplied it. And it then talks about how Sputnik 1 was put into orbit in 1957, Eisenhower's reaction to that, and then how NASA, under the direction of Administrator Keith Glennon through 1960, and starting with a nucleus of engineers at the former NACA headquarters at Langley Field, Virginia, quickly absorbed Von Braun's organization at the Army Redstone Arsenal, Huntsville, Alabama, and rushed preparations for the launch of Cape Canaveral of Explorer 1, which orbited successfully 4 months after the first Sputnik.
Yeah, and Andrew, if I can add, I think the important takeaway there is that Moscow provided the catalyst. We've got to remember what the real driver of the whole moon program was, and that it was a set of unique circumstances that we hadn't seen before and we haven't seen since. I guess you could argue during the Second World War that the threat of Germany taking over the world was the catalyst for the Manhattan Project that developed the atomic bomb. But really, it's only these political impetuses that get these things happening. The technology to go to the moon is existed ever since the Chinese first invented the rocket 1,000 years ago. All we've done is refine the systems and put in some life support systems for the humans, but it's basically the same technology. I think the real takeaway here is that it's a purely political game and there are no votes in space. I think that's the take-home message. And if they believe there's something to be gained in national prestige or a political advantage, we'll go into space. And if there is no advantage, we won't go into space. And that's why we've languished for 40 years. Because as soon as Neil stepped on the moon, tick in the box, game over, we all go home, the politicians are not interested.
I'd like to play here another extract from Kennedy's speech, 1961.
We propose additional funds for other engine development and for unmanned exploration. Explorations which are particularly important for one purpose which this nation will never overlook, the survival of the man who first makes this daring flight. But in a very real sense, it will not be one man going to the moon. If we make this judgment affirmatively, it will be an entire nation. For all of us must work to put him there.
Kennedy there pointing to the fact that it needed the support of the whole country and a vast workforce would be required to do that. Comments, anyone?
When the speech was actually titled A Speech on Urgent National Needs, and this was at the time in as Lena said, it was the Cold War. So what actually happened is that you had the Cold War going, but you also had quite large unemployment, and a project of this magnitude would provide a very healthy jobs program for the duration of any project that was undertaken.
It's one of the other factors is that, as I think Eisenhower talked about, the military-industrial complex.
Oh, yes.
Who were going to be building these spacecraft? Mm. Who were going to be getting these contracts with this endless tap of money? So there was a whole lot of drivers there from industry, and Johnson was in the south, and a lot of aerospace industries spread around the south of the US and other places, and so they were all very much focused on helping and galvanising support for the program as well.
The South was the big winner out of the Apollo program.
Well, that's right.
Mainly because of the electoral votes in Florida and Texas and, to a lesser degree, in Louisiana.
Yes, and even still to this day.
That's true
today,
correct.
The last election campaign, both campaigns. Didn't mention space much, but talk did pop up from time to time, you know, oh, we've got no space program left. Horrors, horrors, no one's... we're going downhill as a nation. We've got no space program left. And at one stage it was seen that Obama may not have won Florida because of the current state of the space program.
Okay. Here's another little quote. This one comes from a book called Project Apollo by Tom Alexander. And it was published in 1964. And it says, although Kennedy had already criticised the slow-paced American space program in his campaign, he himself was unsure what to do about space. Early in his regime, to the despair of the Washington space buffs, he was heard to say that desalination of seawater was about the most important technological program the country could undertake. In the interregnum before he was sworn in, Kennedy's science advisor, the physicist Dr. Jerome Weisner, headed a task force committee that studied the space program and recommended that manned spaceflight be subordinated to other space efforts.
Well, I think that there's another thing that certainly isn't mentioned there, and we didn't know about it at the time, but from Eisenhower's day, there was a second parallel space program in America. The United States Air Force set up its own space program, even to the point of having its own launch vehicles and, later on, having its own astronauts. And that was going on in the background in direct response to the Soviet threat or the perceived Soviet threat. So the Air Force was very interested in the development of all of this, and when Kennedy came along and was being sold the Apollo project, which he had to sell to the whole nation, the military saw this as a potential drain on their budget. So they were always the in the background competitors against the public face of NASA. At the time the Russians launched Sputnik, there was no NASA. There was only the old NACA, NACA. And NASA sort of only got formed...
And NACA was basically an aeronautical
organization. And it was purely largely an aeronautical organization. Space wasn't even considered back then. And so they're all rushing to get their ducks in a row when Sputnik got launched. And USAF was the first cab off the rank. But if you remember, to get the American satellite Explorer launched, it was a contest between the Army Redstone and the Navy Vanguard. So there were no civilian programs in place in the late 50s. It was really run by the military. And all throughout the 60s, the Mercury program and the Gemini programs, the USAF was running in background, and Gemini was actually a front for a whole range of Gemini vehicles that were going to ultimately lead to a manned United States Air Force observation platform orbiting the Earth for purposes of reconnaissance.
Indeed, if you go to the Cape Canaveral Air Force Station, you can see one of those Geminis that was used in the military program. It was actually used by NASA's Gemini 2, and then they cut a hole in the heat shield in the rear, reflew it as part of the manned orbiting laboratory program.
Yeah, it was given the name Blue Gemini or Blue Gemini.
Blue being at the Air Force colour.
Also, you have to remember at the time, President Eisenhower wasn't happy with the way the military was after Sputnik, the way that the military behaved, all three services, you know, our space program's better than your space program. And that was the reason why he got a civilian space agency in there, because he was disgusted by the amount of infighting that went on.
And, of course, in the case of Mercury and, indeed, Gemini, the boosters that they flew on were ICBMs, right?
Yes.
The Titan.
Yeah, the Mercury Atlas, the Mercury Redstone, and the Gemini Titan II were all actually ICBMs designed to fly nuclear bombs into the Soviet Union.
Yep.
Well, let's go to another point. Kennedy was making the point in that speech that it would need a lot of support. And it says here that in a book I'm reading that a Gallup poll conducted around the time of the moon program was being proposed revealed that the American people were not much taken with the idea either. The result showed that 58% of the people were opposed to a moon race costing $40 million, that's $40 billion in our terms today, and about 33% of the people were for it. Now, here's Kennedy referring to the a firm commitment from Congress that if we're going to do it, we've got to really do it properly.
Let it be clear, and this is a judgment which the members of the Congress must finally make. Let it be clear that I am asking the Congress and the country to accept a firm commitment to a new course of action, a course which will last for many years and carry very heavy costs, $531 million in fiscal 62, and an estimated $7 to $9 billion additional over the next 5 years. If we are to go only halfway or reduce our sights in the face of difficulty, in my judgment, it would be better not to go at all. Now, this is a choice which this country must make. And I'm confident that under the leadership of the space committees of the Congress and the appropriating committees that you will consider the matter carefully. It is a most important decision that we make as a nation.
So there we have Kennedy saying, yep, if we're going to do this, we're going to do it properly. It's no half measures.
So that speech or that appeal to the Congress was made with those support numbers. 33% or so believing that they shouldn't do it.
And they should do it.
But they should do it, sorry, yeah, yes. And 60-odd percent that
yeah,
they should.
Yeah, about 60% against and 30% for.
And, of course, the Congress approved it. And yes. That was pre his assassination, right?
Yes.
Yes, but yeah. In the lead-up to his assassination, NASA were bumping into problems with the Congress with budgets being cut. There was even a story at one stage that appeared in Time magazine that with several astronauts becoming discouraged, and they stated so publicly about the lack of progress that was happening with the Gemini program. And in the background, you also had Kennedy approaching Khrushchev saying, let's do this thing together. And
I don't think Johnson even was aware of that.
He wasn't.
This was a Kennedy initiative.
Yes.
I think in the end what saved Apollo was the fact that, yes, the public was, their resolve was hardened by his assassination.
Mm.
But once Johnson had taken over the presidency, he was an advocate and he was able to sell it to Congress because he knew that this was going to cost a truckload of money in order to do it. And the budget kept rising. It actually peaked in about 65. And from then on, even by the time of 69, the budget was a half of what it had been in 1965 by the time of the moon landing.
Hmm. Okay. Kennedy is very much aware when he makes this speech that Congress might not buy it, and he is prepared for that. And he actually refers to that in his speech. Here we go.
I believe we should go to the moon, but I think every citizen of this country, as well as the members of the Congress, should consider the matter carefully in making their judgment, to which we've given attention over many weeks and months, because it is a heavy burden, and there is no sense in agreeing or desiring that the United States take an affirmative position in outer space unless we are prepared to do the work and bear the burdens to make it successful.
So Kennedy is obviously aware that our Congress may turn around and say no. The American people may say no. Too expensive. We don't want to do it.
But he was talking to the Congress and the people, and there's really little the people could do about it until the next election.
Mm-hmm.
And really the decision had been made, and he was letting the Congress and the people thinking that they were having some ownership of the decision. And like we said before, they were going to go to the moon because of the nature of the Cold War. Kennedy just had to make them think it was their idea. And wasn't he great to listen to? Wouldn't you follow him anywhere?
It's interesting, though, because
we've never had a president in America since Kennedy that had the gift of the gab, as it were.
Possibly Clinton.
Mm.
Although a lot of people say Reagan was the great communicator. I don't necessarily agree, but it's actually interesting. I was just thinking, it was pretty courageous of him, like a first-term president in the first part of his first term, to make that commitment. I mean, that's a lot of times they these presidents, they leave these big commitments to the second term because, well, if it doesn't work out, I'm not going to get re-elected anyway, so it really doesn't matter, you know.
And it's not my fault if it doesn't, if the following Congress and following president doesn't support it. Well, that's their failure, not mine.
Yeah. Yes, but Peter, remember the environment. The Russians had already chalked up an impressive list of firsts by the time he had made that speech with Sputnik, with Laika, with Gagarin. These things had already happened before that speech was made. And he knew that he was behind. So sometimes the events drive the occasion.
You say that they would have gone to the moon. I mean, obviously the moon was one of the big projects or big targets that were tabled. Is it potentially that he could have done something else big in space that was put on the table?
What about a space station? Suppose he'd said, the moon can come later. As a stepping stone towards the moon, we need a space station. Now, that was an argument that was current then. What would have happened had Kennedy made that decision instead?
I think the time frame just would have been longer. There's not a lot of charisma in a space station that just goes around in low Earth orbit. And it was a lucky stab to go for the moon in the sense that they didn't realise how far in front of the Soviets they really were. They knew nothing about the Soviet space engineering program. They didn't know about the chief engineer, who actually died in 1966, and how far behind the Russian equipment and technology was. They thought they were in a fair dinkum race. Mm. And so they figured the only way we've got any way of winning this is to reach far and technologically and go for something like the moon, because the Russians will probably beat us into an orbiting space station and may beat us to the moon. So they were riding a long shot. They didn't actually know how far in front they were.
Because actually at the time it was thought that if they announced they were going to build a space station that the Soviets would beat them in building a space station.
Now, the thing about the moon target, it's also a very definitive target. Okay. You stick something up in space, you call it a space station. Is it a space station? How do you define it? Is it 3? Is it 5? Is it 20? How long does it stay out for? But actually going and saying human, moon, return, safe is very, very definable. So if you do it, you've won. If you don't do it, you fail.
Has there been any single thing that's happened in the more than decade-long life of the space station that has come anywhere near to attracting the attention of a moon landing?
No.
And there you go.
Well, we'll take a break and we'll be back with our discussion in a moment.
This is David Frost. The Thursday Road Music, a featured musical, and once a month, the Kingston Council with their news or the Lions Club. Also, there's news from the Opportunity Shop. Tune in on Thursdays at midday on Southern FM 88.3.
And we're on the space show with a discussion with Len Halperin, Kate Doolan and Peter Arwood from the Space Association of Australia. And we're talking about the Apollo program, the end of the Apollo program. And we've got one little clip here to play for several minutes about von Braun and what he thought the situation was when Kennedy made his statement.
You see, back in 1961, when the commitment was made by the President and by Congress that we should land a man on the moon, we knew vaguely that it could be done. In fact, I'd written books on the subject and made lots of speeches about it. But there's still a difference between seeing that something can be done in principle and knowing exactly which of the several conceivable avenues is the best when you really have to implement a program. And at the beginning, there were numerous trade-off studies. For example, we investigated, is it smarter to fly with one spacecraft all the way to the lunar surface? There would be no LEM, that the command service module itself would land on the lunar surface. And we fly the whole thing out and back on the same rocket. Well, it turned out this would have required a much bigger rocket than the Saturn V, one with 12 engines instead of 8. We called it the Nova. Then another alternative was that we would fly two launch vehicles the size of Saturn V only to Earth orbit and combine the two payloads of these two Saturn V rockets in Earth orbit and then fly with a single spacecraft to the moon.
And that's von Braun saying the state of the knowledge at the time that Kennedy made his announcement.
Yeah, I think you're just getting down to the nuts and bolts of it. What he was showing was that the physics doesn't let you get away with it.
Sorry, Len, I didn't have your microphone on. Try again.
Testing, hello. What that's just showing is that was getting down to the nuts and bolts of how they were going to go to the moon, and it was showing that physics really doesn't let you get away with anything, and that to try the Nova approach, which was a huge rocket, the physics demanded that it be a huge rocket, but it was a budget killer. Nova was an absolute budget killer. The Saturn was actually going to do the job for them, so I think that's just what he was saying there.
Well, we are 40 years since the landing of Apollo 17 back on Earth. Any thoughts on that anniversary?
I just think one little nice bit I remember from Apollo 17, this has stuck with me, and it's become so famous in its own little way that it's even been mentioned on the program Modern Family, which is on TV at the moment, that one of the very last things that Gene Cernan did on the moon was he carved his daughter Tracy's initials in the lunar surface and said they're going to be there for a very long time. So for all the doubters, if you finally get to the Apollo 17 lunar landing site, you'll see TDC carved with his finger in the lunar soil, and I think that's just lovely.
Mm. And a number of the astronauts did leave for photos and personal mementos on the moon as well.
Yes, they did. If someone was to go up to the moon today and bring those back, they'd be worth a small fortune.
The US passed a resolution last year or the year before that they've declared all of those areas to be national historic sites, and if and when we do get to the moon, we're not allowed to go there.
But that's only binding for American spacecraft.
That's
not
true.
The spacecraft.
The Chinese might get it.
No, they've done it to the Apollo landing sites.
Just, oh, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've declared it, but there's nothing to stop us Australians from going there and kicking the dust, wiping out Neil Armstrong's steps and saying, here, an Australian first set foot on the moon.
Yeah, actually, Andrew Thomas did a PowerPoint presentation with a controversial graphic at the end.
Did
you see it with these Chinese astronauts pushing over the US flag and a Chinese flag in place of it?
And I saw another cartoon that a similar thing, Chinese astronaut descending to the lunar surface saying, oh, one big step for us, one even bigger kick in the ghoulies for the Americans.
Well, when do you think overall the Apollo program was worth it, or should we have gone another way?
Quick. I think, as Neil Armstrong said, Apollo was a good thing to do.
I think it was a good thing to do.
It's the only thing that's going to be remembered of this century in 500 years' time.
Correct.
Last century.
Sorry, Peter.
It's history.
Thank you all. We have been talking on the Space Show with Len Halperin, Kate Doolin, and Peter Arwood.